The Psychedologist.
In this episode, Reishi and I drop in at Finca Amrita in Costa Rica to discuss favorite herbs and fungi and how they impact our consciousness, particularly the synergy of non-psychedelic plants and fungi paired with entheogenic plants and fungi. It's really fun. Reishi also speaks to the techniques of microdosing and offers critical commentary on the popular Stamets stack. We close the episode with a call to respect and protect the wild populations of plants, particularly those becoming popularized, such as ayahuasca, and the indigenous people who steward the traditions surrounding their use. Reishi Strauss is an Appalachian-born herbalist and mycologist now based in the Pacific Northwest, where she attended Bastyr University and received her Bachelor's of Science in Herbal Science. A lover of the intersections between science and spirit, Reishi loves to connect with plants in the laboratory, in the forest, in a witch's brew under the full moon, and on research databases. A believer in the psychedelic nature of all plants, Reishi has a strong passion to weave together all plants and mushrooms into the tapestry of human relationship. She is also passionate about utilizing plant medicines in a way that is respectful and reciprocal to the earth and the indigenous communities who steward them. You can connect more with Reishi on her Instagram, earth_and_spirit, or check out her plant medicine creations on her website, earthandspiritbotanicals.com. Reishi and I are sitting in the garden at Finca Amrita. Some listeners recognize that name from an earlier podcast episode with Susanna, early days of the Psychedologist. And we're sitting beside what I knew as Hoja de Pastor, but Reishi just told me it's also, aka Salvia Divinorum.
Yeah, a kind of psychoactive member of the Salvia, the sage genus.
The story of this plant is really funny. I water the other garden, and Miguel one day said, make sure to water this plant. It's very expensive, very precious, even more than marijuana. And I was like, wow, okay. So I like made sure to water that plant. And then one day I was reaching past it to harvest kale or something, and I broke the one flowering part off. It just snapped right off. Fuck. But I had... I had snipped a Tulsi flower a few weeks ago to put on an altar for someone who departed. And the stem grew roots out. And so I was like, oh, wow, it's so easy to... It was my first time making a cutting, and it was, like, accidental. Yeah. So then I planted that. So then I took the flower of the salvia and let it root out and planted it, and that's this.
Oh, that's so precious.
I'll put a picture of it with this episode.
Yeah. Oh, that's so beautiful.
So I've been happy to have another one now, because when I leave, I can give it to Miguel and say, here, your plant multiplied.
That's awesome. And yeah, this is actually the perfect plant to do that with. It propagates really easily, and you can't see it if you're just listening right now, but the nodes, which is where the plant grows out of the stem, or the leaves grow out of the stem, the nodes are really like easily broken and snapped, and you can just kind of snap it off at the node and then put it in some water and root it and then propagate it. Or you can even propagate it through a technique called layering, which is when you just kind of bend it over and bury part of its stem in the soil and then kind of let the top of the stem peek out, and it'll grow another plant there as well as where it was growing from originally. So it's a really easy plant to propagate. It definitely just wants to divide and multiply and share itself with the world. Oh, cool. So obviously this podcast episode is going to be about plants. Obviously all I like to talk about.
Spoiler alert. Well, let's talk about you first.
Sure, yeah.
What was your relationship to consciousness as a child?
Yeah, I love that question, because I feel like children are just like straight from source, like still so connected to that psychedelic place that's before birth and after death. And yeah, kids and elders are just like really close to that place. So yeah, my consciousness definitely went through phases as it still is. And, yeah, I mean, the first thing I remember is I had some pretty prevalent imaginary friends when I was a child with my older brother. They were two twins named KK and Dago, and they were awesome. They were just the coolest and like always encouraged me to do, you know, crazy things, and it was always their fault and, you know, not mine and their idea. And they were just my best friends, and I really believe they were real, and I would see them. I can describe what they look like, and they were beings and had personality, and yeah, I'm sure they're still out there somewhere. So that was when I was younger. And then as I grew older, I grew up in a, I mean, just talking about consciousness, I think of like spirituality and religion. And I grew up, in a pretty conservative Jewish environment. And, as most kids, I felt rebellious towards that religion and, then towards God and spirituality in general. So when I was like in high school, I was very into atheism and nihilism, and went to a special school for math and science, and was taking like multivariable calculus classes, and really into physics, especially quantum physics. And that was actually the first place that, or the first portal that I really found spirituality, actually, was through like these advanced calculus courses that would help me understand how you can take derivatives of space-time and pop between different dimensions based on like, you know, which, yeah, just dimensional reality you were taking the derivative of and zooming in and zooming out of. And then quantum physics just showing me how full of unknown the universe is, and how just observing certain phenomena will impact its outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's string theory, right?
Sort of, yeah. Pretty kind of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the specific theory I'm thinking of is, I think was founded through like the double slit particle experiment, where there's like I think golden electrons or something going through a sheet, and when no one's observing it, it kind of forms a wave pattern on the recepting sheet. I'm probably not explaining this experiment very, very accurately, but then when someone is observing it, it shows as going like through a specific like collapsed reality like endpoint, rather than just like a possible reality when no one's observing it. So that's that. Yeah, that was kind of a big game changer in my mind. And then string theory is kind of this like interconnected fabric mesh of the space-time existence and everything pulling on each other. So yeah, they're similar but a little different.
You're competing with the chickens and the Jake brake on the big truck on the highway.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was wondering if the microphone would pick those things up.
I'm sure it's picking them up, and my editor's pulling his hair out right now. That's okay. Cool. All right, so then what happened after that?
Yeah, what happened after that? Plants, to put lightly. Yeah, I started getting into my first time doing psychedelics was pretty fresh and young, I think. Young is a relative term, but at 16, and I was at music and arts festival with my older brother, and I was very naive and like hadn't really even smoked weed that much, and thought that, you know, any psychedelics were drugs and drugs were bad, and I wasn't very like interested in that world. And we're at this festival, and this really cute like hippie girl comes up to me and my older brother and our friends, and is just being really cute, and I really liked her energy. And then she was like, yeah, you know, does anyone want any L? Like, anyone want any doses? And I didn't even know what those words meant. And I was just like, oh, like, she's selling drugs. Like, I don't want any of those. And then didn't really pay attention to her much more. And then I noticed my older brother was, like, talking to her. And I went up and he was like, yeah, like, tell me about your L. Like, I'd like some. And I was like, what? Like, my older brother's, like, doing drugs? Like, well, if he's doing them, then I'm gonna do them. Like, if he can do it, I can do it. So I just kind of, like, yeah, took some L and had no idea what that even was, and had such a life-changing experience that fortunately was very, very positive. I think it probably would have been safer for people to go into their first psychedelic experience with some sort of, like, background or intention, but luckily it turned out really well for me and was just super magical. And I just felt like, wow, this, like, yeah, we're just like these evolved monkeys on this spinning rock in outer space, and different things, like, impact the way we perceive life. And, like, there is all these magical music, you know, going around, and, like, music festival in the Appalachian Mountains. And it's just a very magical experience that really turned me on to magic, and meaning, like, purpose in life. And yeah, and I was grateful to find that at 16, and just kind of have been interested in psychedelic medicines ever since.
So you ended up going to herbalism school, and did you always know that you wanted to, like, combine herbalism with psychedelic use, or did that come later?
Yeah, I mean, to me, they're almost not separate. Like, you know, the study of psychedelic plants is the study of plants. And so in my mind, I was actually kind of just like, okay, well, if, you know, this is just what, like, one plant does to me, or the derivative of one plant, like, I wonder what other plants do to my consciousness. That was just kind of like the natural direction of my thought process. And yeah, after that trip at 16, I started getting quite into cannabis, which I loved, and maybe too heavily, and it was very illegal in Virginia, and my parents did not like me smoking weed heavily. So I just remember, yeah, one day just, like, being like, well, weed is just one plant that gets you high. Like, there has to be other plants that get you high if you smoke them. So I just, like, typed into Google or something, like, plants besides weed that get you high, or, like, legal plants that get you high. And I did some research, and
it was like salvia.
Salvia was definitely one of them, actually. Yeah, and I actually had some really positive experiences with salvia divinorum when I was younger, but that is not everyone's experience. It's a very intense plant. And but I did find mugwort, Artemisia vulgaris, which is kind of like this really magical witch's herb that, yeah, was used a lot just kind of by, like, yeah, the European folk medicine, witch tradition, paganism, and has a really calming effect on the system, helps you remember your dreams, like, just these really attractive features. And I remember reading about its properties, and I was like, well, I was just really looking for something to smoke and get high, and I was reading, like, really? Like, a plant that makes you remember your dreams? Like, a plant that, like, relaxes your nervous system? Like, I don't know if I believe those. But then I, yeah, ordered some, like, off of eBay or something, and started smoking it, and sure enough, like, remembering my dreams and just feeling, like, a lot of profound healing in my anxiety, which I experienced quite a lot when I was younger. And just started noticing these other effects on top of feeling really good after I just smoked it. And I was like, wow, okay, like, this is really cool. And this is just one plant. So I, like, just naturally got more and more curious and other plants and how they impact my consciousness. And yeah, and then also going through kind of some traumatic experiences with trying to manage my anxiety from a Western medicine perspective, and seeing a psychiatrist who prescribe me SSRIs and Xanax, and then I was also on pharmaceutical birth control and was just on this like cocktail of medicines for my reproductive health and for my anxiety management. And yeah, and it was just a very harmful relationship, and I got addicted to Xanax. I got really depressed from all the SSRI pharmaceutical birth control Xanax interactions. And so mugwort really helped me a lot kind of manage my anxiety, and then kind of looking into other herbs that would help with anxiety management, like kava kava was really powerful, valerian was really powerful, and I ended up actually weaning myself off of Xanax using valerian and kava kava as my replacements. And for anyone out there who has ever taken Xanax or any benzodiazepine, they're very, very addictive and very, very hard to wean off of, especially if you're using them on a daily basis like I was. So just kind of finding other herbal medicines to support my health journey and healing my anxiety and my nervous system, and eventually using it for reproductive health, and just transitioning myself off of all these pharmaceuticals that were really making me feel actually depressed and suicidal at times. And just healing myself with these different herbal medicines, and then just feeling this like profound calling to like share this with other people who are suffering from similar things or other things and have only tried Western medicine and don't realize that there's other herbal therapies that can really provide healing. So it was kind of after all of that that I decided to go to herbal school, and it's kind of interesting, you know, in herbalism school, even though, you know, salvia divorum, like cannabis, psilocybe, mushrooms, ayahuasca, ibogaine, you know, all of these are herbal medicines. There was kind of like a taboo in some herbalism schools around like incorporating psychedelic plant medicines. And so I've just like always just wanted to integrate these two worlds, and noticing in other cultures they're so integrated. Like the shaman is a herbalist and is a medicine man or woman. And, you know, especially in Amazonian plant medicine, like they really, the shamans are these like great orchestrators of herbs and weaving together the right herbs with your ayahuasca brew to like really, bring in a much more deep, profound layer of healing and dieting the plants. So in a lot of other traditions, you know, there is this interweaving of psychedelic plants with quote unquote non-psychedelic plants or normal healing plants, although all plants are psychedelic if you like connect with them deeply enough.
That's one hypocrisy that Sarah Wu talks about sometimes, uh-huh, that people say, yeah, oh yes, I do plant medicine. Mm-hmm. It's like, but they really mean that they do ayahuasca. And she's like, there's thousands of medicinal plants.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I've talked with her about this exact topic, and yeah, her perspectives have definitely informed and helped shape my perspectives on this as well. And I'm grateful for her wisdom around this topic.
Mm-hmm. So you said to me earlier that there are some great herbs and fungi to use sort of in preparation for journey work, during journeys, and after. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I would love to. And also just want to be kind of preface everything I'm about to share that I feel definitely still like a humble beginning in this fine art and skill of weaving together plants and psychedelic plants with medicinal plants and understanding how they interact. So I've done a little bit of theorizing and a little bit of experimentation and observation and kind of some informal data collection. but I still have so much to learn on this topic. But I'm just, yeah.
A lot of self-study.
a lot of self-study for sure. But I love studying this topic. And so if there's any listeners who have experience to share, I really encourage anyone to get in touch with me. And yeah, maybe we can put my contact information, Instagram handle, so forth in the show notes.
And just say what it is right now in case anyone's...
Lovely. Yeah. So on Instagram, I'm at earth_and_spirit. And then my website, where I make mostly medicinal mushroom extracts, because I love all plants and mushrooms, but I live in the Pacific Northwest and I really like mushrooms. So yeah, I have a website where I sell my medicinal mushroom extracts that go very good with psychedelics and psychedelic mushrooms as well. But I don't sell that on my website. But my website is earthandspiritbotanicals.com. So you can get in touch with me on my website as well.
Cool. Thanks. Mm-hmm. So tell us.
Yeah. Okay. So what am I telling you?
Let's start with preparation.
That's
I guess.
Right. That's right. Thank you. Okay. So, I mean, the main system I think of when preparing ourselves for journeys are the nervous system and the digestion system, because you're digesting sometimes a slightly toxic substance that can cause digestive discomfort. So, you know, on days that I'm eating psilocybe mushrooms or sometimes LSD or especially ayahuasca or peyote, San Pedro, really anything, I will just like eat a lot of ginger in the days before, ginger tea, ginger curries, just kind of like a lot of ginger to help, just kind of get my digestion going, and also kind of have that ginger as anti-nausea, so it kind of helps keep that energy at bay. And then eating bitter foods to stimulate the digestive secretions, maybe an hour or so before I eat the psychedelic, and just kind of thinking about getting your digestive going. And then ginger is also a antispasmodic for your digestive tract and your muscles, actually. So it's just kind of nice to prevent spasming and cramping after you ingest the medicine.
And what would be a good bitter thing to eat?
Yeah, thank you.
Or drink?
Yeah, I mean, very literally anything that you put on your tongue and you're like, oh, that's bitter. But like a classic bitter formula would be like some sort of liver cleansing blend or herbs such as dandelion root, burdock root, yellow dock root, milk thistle, reishi. The mushroom is quite bitter. You can use reishi as a bitter. The peel from a citrus or an orange peel, that's quite bitter. You can make a bitter formula altogether. Like one of my favorite bitter formulas is to combine cacao, like dark chocolate, cacao nibs with orange or tangerine peel and some like cardamom or ginger, because that adds like the extra digestive antispasmodic property. So if you want to make your own tincture, you can combine the cacao, orange peel, cardamom, pour some alcohol over it, shake it for a moon cycle every day, 28 days, then strain it and put a few drops of that on your tongue, like every day or before a meal. And it'll help with a lot of things with digestion in general. Or you can like nibble on an orange peel or buy a pre-made bitters formula. I could do a whole podcast episode on making different herbal medicines. So that's bitters. And then the other system I would focus on would be the nervous system, just because psychedelics can be just quite intense for your nervous system. And personally, I've noticed that with LSD particularly, like I really like feel that LSD taps into the electrical nervous system conductive network. I like really feel that. Especially with LSD, and I would just take like nourishing nervines. Like there's three different types of nervines or things that act on the nervous system. There's stimulating nervines, there's sedating nervines, and then there's just like true nervines that just like nourish and restore the nervous system. They don't sedate you or stimulate you. So my favorite ones for that is milky oats, which, you know, I don't think I have it on my website, but I have like a stash. So if anyone wants that, you can just send me a message on my website. It's like my personal stash, but it's pretty big, honestly.
She's got the milky oat hookup.
Yeah, because you have to make them really right. Like it has to be when the oat pod is like literally milky and it only lasts for a few days and you have to tincture it fresh in like high proof alcohol. There's like a very particular way to make it. But when it's made right, it works really well.
I'll take one.
I got you. So yeah, milky oats is my favorite. Skullcap also works well. St. John's wort, although it acts on the serotonin receptors, so it has a lot of drug interactions, so I just recommend being cautious with that one. But yeah, skullcap, milky oats, those are probably my favorite, just like nourishing nervines. But if you don't have access to those, you can just take like calming nervines like chamomile, lemon balm, lavender, things like that. And I would do that after the session also. I would take digestive herbal support and bitters like before and up until and even during the session if you can handle it. And then afterwards I would really focus on nervines, nourishing and calming nervines, like making some, yeah, nice, like, and fats also, like, just because fats are just your nervous system, like, runs on fats pretty much, your myelin sheath, which is the, like, what your nerve cell synapses is coated in, it's like, the myelin sheath is like a fatty substance. So drinking lots of good fats, eating or drinking lots of good fats. So I would make like one of my favorite things is a London fog. So like Earl Grey tea with coconut milk and lavender tea and honey. And like that's just really nice after a really intense psychedelic experience. But anything, yeah, chamomile, lemon balm, lavender, passion flower, a nice mugwort spliff. mugwort's good for the nervous system. Linden. Yeah, there's lots of good things for the nervous system. Mm. So yeah, those are the two systems I would focus on before the trip, the digestive system and nervous system. And after the trip, really the nervous system. And then potentially encouraging some sort of like lymphatic or liver detox or drainage, depending on which psychedelic it was and how the body metabolizes it. Because some of them are registered as like slightly toxic. So it's good to support the liver with, again, bitter herbs, burdock, dandelion, milk thistle, reishi. Actually, reishi is a really good bet for before, during, and after anything, obviously. I'm a fan of this mushroom, but it acts on the nervous system as both nourishing and sedating. It helps to support liver health, respiratory health, immune system, detox pathways. It just kind of supports the body to do whatever it needs to do.
And I'm thinking like people sometimes are taking psychedelics at festivals, so supporting the immune system could even be like a pre-festival, pre-journey thing to consider too.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So detox, lymphatic drainage, which you can do with a massage. It's really good if you can swing it to like schedule a massage in the days after a journey to kind of, yeah, help with that lymphatic detox, as well as like just do something nourishing and grounding for yourself.
You were telling me yesterday about sort of like a special formula or secret formula with psilocybin.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a secret formula because it's inspired by the Mayan culture and Yeah. And just to state the obvious, all of our psychedelic traditions come from indigenous cultures and, who stewarded these plants and developed relationships and traditions and have a huge bank of wisdom and knowledge around these medicines. So I think I almost wish I said that right off the bat, because I think that's a very important discussion and acknowledgement to have in psychedelic plant medicine discussions and spaces, which are so often held in Western society, and there's just ways that colonialization has impacted psychedelic plant medicines and the cultures who steward them, and in sad ways. So just having that awareness in these discussions. And on that note, just as long as there's a microphone in front of me, and I'm looking at a San Pedro cactus right now, peyote, which is another psychoactive cactus, which is very slow growing, is being rapidly over harvested kind of due to its popularity of use, and is a very slow growing cactus. So to be honest, I just really discourage people from using this plant, from harvesting this plant, from sitting with this plant, because we're decimating its wild populations through its trendiness and psychedelic culture and psychedelic plant culture. So I think if there's an indigenous person who comes from one of the tribes that steward this plant and knows how to be in right relationship with this plant and hold ceremony with that plant, that's the only condition I would sit with peyote under. I just wanted to say that.
And for more information, check out Dawn Davis's work on peyote conservation, and also a prior episode of this podcast with Dawn.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm totally need to listen to that episode, obviously.
It was like it's a current controversy, and Lucid News just had an article on it, that all the decriminalized nature initiatives are including peyote in, in like their pictures and in the tight headlines. And, so indigenous folks were saying like, please leave it off and don't mention it, because it could like ignite more interest in it and more like harmful harvesting. And so it's a very interesting debate that I suggest, if this is of interest to people, that they look into what indigenous people are saying about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And just have these conversations. We don't have to know the answers or know the perfect way to proceed, but just to talk about them and hold that hold the discomfort of that some of these conversations can bring up. But just personally, my personal stance, which I'm not saying is the ultimate right stance for everyone to take, but just my personal stance is I won't sit with peyote unless it's offered to me by an indigenous person who stewards those medicines. And I've never had that opportunity, so I've never sat with peyote or ingested it. I've sat with the plant, and you can journey with it that way too. But anyways, got a little carried away there, but the original question was about this secret formula, which was inspired by the Mayan culture, and they would combine psilocybin mushrooms with cacao, and usually a little bit of cayenne. And I just love that blend so much. Cacao is just such a heart opener, and like really helps bring like these deep-seated emotions to the surface of your consciousness, so you can feel them fully, so you can heal suppressed emotions, so you can just feel yourself more deeply and fully. And combining that with psilocybin is just like so beautiful, and really makes, like, for me, has made my journeys much more like emotional. Like with psychoactive mushrooms, combining them with cacao really just brings forth like like the wonder of my emotions and how they impact my life experience and my human experience, and like really investigating like how certain phenomena make me feel and impact me, and have really learned a lot about myself and my heart through that combination. And then combining it with cayenne has cayenne acts as a circulatory stimulant, so it just kind of sends the medicine throughout the whole body and just kind of makes it this like full-bodied embodied experience. So I really like doing like movement and dance on psilocybe, cacao, and cayenne, and just feeling my body and feeling my feelings and just like having an emotional embodied experience with those three medicines together. And then I guess kind of like my secret formula, which I'm sure people have done before, and probably indigenous people that we don't have records of, is combining those with reishi as well, because reishi also is a heart medicine, or in scientific terms, a coronary vasodilator. So it
As is cacao, right?
Yeah, totally, exactly. So it dilates the blood vessels around the heart, bringing more blood flow to the heart, making it more of a heart-centered experience. And then reishi just, you know, also is mushroom consciousness, as is psilocybe. So combining like reishi and psilocybe, they just like recognize each other and harmonize really well, and kind of just bring this like really like grounded, wholesome energy to the experience. Yeah.
Is there anything else that you care to share on this topic?
This topic of combining herbal medicines with psychedelic plants, or
yeah, or whatever. Like, is there anything else that you care to share on herbs, psychedelics, combination?
For sure. Yeah, and feel free to cut me off at any time, because I could talk about this subject for quite a while.
Well, the rain held off for us, so that's good.
Yeah, it hasn't rained yet here in this beautiful Costa Rican climate. I'd love to just share just briefly some of my favorite plant combinations with psychedelic plant medicines. So I shared the cacao, reishi, cayenne, psilocybe, mushroom combo that I love so dearly. Just to reiterate, like ginger and psilocybe. So the most experience I have is with psilocybe mushrooms. I've sat with San Pedro and ayahuasca and LSD and psilocybe and salvia divinorum and a various variety of less known psychoactive plants. But my most like beloved psychoactive plant ally is definitely the psilocybin containing mushrooms, although technically they're mushrooms and not plants, which is fungi is an entirely other kingdom, not even in the same kingdom classification. But so when I'm sharing about synergistic herbal combos, I'll mostly be sharing about things I like to combine with psilocybe, although I'm guessing that they might be similar with LSD and some other medicines. But with psilocybe, especially, of course, there's different ways you can extract the psilocin and make it less taxing on the digestive system, like making tea with psilocybe or doing the like Paul Stamets blue ice cube extraction. There's different ways to extract the psilocin, not the psilocybin, so it's easier on your digestive system. I need to go over the pharmacology of that to understand how it works exactly, but still just ginger and psilocybe is really, really helpful. And then the other day I drank a really high dose of turmeric and with my psilocybe tea, kind of make like a psilocybe golden milk. And it felt really good to have a high dose of turmeric. I just felt like, you know, turmeric is really anti-inflammatory, and I just felt so much space and mobility in my body and could just really feel like... it was just a very like just being in a body felt really nice.
That reminds me of a friend who swears by microdosing LSD with high doses of turmeric. You just reminded me. Yeah, that was the thing. It was like, not microdosing, not high doses of turmeric, together.
Both together. Yeah. I feel that would work really well. And honestly, here in Costa Rica, we got both those things in abundant. We have the Psilocybe cubensis, which grow, in their natural habitat on cow pies here. And turmeric, curcuma longa, that grows just like very, very happily in this climate. So, yep, it's a good place to do that. I'm like making a note. But so turmeric and psilocybe, and then different nootropic herbs. So herbs that are indicated for your cognitive functioning, your central nervous system. So kind of one of the more classic combinations is with lion's mane. That's good for a variety of reasons. Lion's mane helps with, just central nervous system functioning, particularly increasing the prevalence of something called the nerve growth factor in your brain, which is your brain's and central nervous system's ability to synthesize new neurons, which literally makes your brain grow, aka like new perspectives, more creativity, like seeing the world in different ways.
Could it also mean creating new habits or like changing old habits, like more mobility in that?
For sure. Yeah, very connected to like neuroplasticity and increasing that. And both with micro and macro doses of psilocybe, it's good to take a macro dose of lion's mane, like a really high dose of lion's mane. And I've definitely have helped a lot of people and experienced personally a lot of lifestyle habit change using microdoses of psilocybin with high doses of lion's mane. Definitely helps just kind of like restructure the brain, literally.
And then in a microdosing regimen with niacin?
Yeah, so Paul Stamets, everyone is just like, just so into this Paul Stamets niacin stack. And I think it like makes sense as a theory, but it's definitely like just a theory that he has. And it's that niacin, which is basically vitamin B6, that it kind of drives the life force to the periphery of the nervous system. And so his philosophy is combining that with psilocybin and lion's mane, which are these neuroplastic nerve growth factor producing mushroom medicines, that combining that with niacin, vitamin B6, kind of like sends the life force to the edge of like your nervous and cardiovascular system and like helps it grow, which is plausible, like could be happening in your brain, but could also be happening at every nerve circulatory tip. And I'm like not an expert on niacin and vitamin B6, but like when I've taken it, you know, when you get that flush, I feel it mostly in my circulatory system. So I'm not sure how indicated it is for the nervous system, but I've had this idea actually for a while of, instead of doing that with, you know, like a synthetic vitamin derivative, to instead use a herbal medicine that's does the same effect. So is a nervine that's specifically indicated for the peripheral nervous system. And so two plants that do that is prickly ash, which is a kind of cactus. Prickly ash, I think, is the only thing I can think of. There might be like, I'm thinking of like St. John's wort, potentially, and then also I would say just like prickly ash is the main one that I know of. So I've been wanting to do that stack for a long time, and have had, I think, what are good experiences with it. I think it's like a cool idea, but I think that people are kind of like just really like latching onto it when it's just kind of like a theory that, you know, we don't actually know what it does.
Well, like, especially the people who think Paul Stamets is, like, the guru to save the world now.
Yeah.
And he's, like, really kind of a curmudgeon-y curmudgeon.
Yeah, I mean, I've gone through many different perspectives and opinions on how I view him, and he has been kind of like a pioneer of the mycology takeoff in America. And although I might not agree with every single piece of perspective and his philosophy, you know, and everything, and yeah, and I definitely have just different views on certain things than him, and think he's a little obsessed with mycelium, although mycelium are super cool, he's like really obsessed and like over focuses on the mycelium rather than the fruiting body, the mushrooms, but I still have a deep respect for him for kind of being a pioneer of North American mycology and doing a bunch of good research. And but he is, yeah, kind of just like the pop culture icon of mycology. So that's okay. So yeah, let's see, I was talking about plant medicine synergies with psilocybe. So lion's mane, like, for sure, high doses of lion's mane, which, by the way, I got that on my website. If I could just because it's really good stuff. That's why I started my own business, was because there was some companies that just use mycelium in their mushroom extracts, and when you make mycelium medicine, it's going to be interwoven with the substrate it's being grown on, which a lot of companies just grow them off of rice. So when you're getting medicinal mushroom extracts with the mycelium, you're usually just getting powdered rice. Wow. With a little bit of mycelium. And there's, like, you know, the mycelium is growing off the rice, so it's more than just rice, but it's, like, yeah, all the medicines I use on my website only are using the fruiting body or the actual mushroom. There's no filler or myceliated rice or anything like that. And that's kind of hard to find, so that's why I started my own business. But anyways, so lion's mane, and then really any nootropic, I think, would be really interesting to combine with both micro and macro doses of psilocybe. I'm interested in using macuna to combine them, which prevents and treats Alzheimer's and increases dopamine. And yeah, if anyone has any experiences with combining, like, herbal nootropics and psilocybe or psychedelics in general, I'm really interested in that, and please send me a message or an email. But yeah, so lion's mane, and then gotu kola, which is another plant that is here, and I'm literally looking at it right there. It's growing right next to us. Hey, you little cutie. So it's actually naturalized here. It's not native, but I don't know if I'd call it invasive, but yeah, it's an herb known as Brahmi in Ayurvedic medicine, and is good for the brain and the central nervous system. And the few times that I've taken gotu kola while on micro macro doses of psilocybe, I've just felt like very lucid, like very present, like had a lot of like ideas and clarity about certain like problems in my life. And yeah, I just really liked combining gotu kola with the psilocybes. So yeah, nootropics, digestives, nervous systems. There's a couple herbs that I found helpful for kind of like bringing down my trip a little bit. Kind of more heavy hitting nervines, such as kava kava and valerian, will kind of just help the nervous system calm down. And if you're having just like a rough trip or a difficult experience or getting caught in like cyclical thinking patterns, a strong nervous system sedative can kind of just like lower that energy, that intensity. So yeah, passion flower, hops, kava kava, valerian root, and then let's see. And then also there's a plant that only grows, I'm pretty sure, in the Pacific Northwest and British Columbia, called Devil's Club. Oplo panax hortus is its Latin name. And I've never read this anywhere, but I've just experienced it directly a couple times, that when I've been on psychedelic medicines and taken like a couple dropperfuls of Devil's Club, it just like really brings me down. Like one time it like completely stopped my trip entirely, which was actually kind of a bummer because I was like planning this whole like, you know, like, oh, I'm gonna get my like herbal tincture chest and go out into the forest and like take like 3 grams and just have a grand time going through all my tinctures and seeing how they impact me. And Devil's Club was like the third tincture I tried, and then it just completely like just brought me back to earth, and I was just like, fuck, I'm like not even tripping anymore. And then I've shared that with a couple other herbalist friends who have tried it themselves and confirmed that it was their experience too. So I'd like other people to try that and let me know what they experience, because it could be really useful and helpful to have a safe herbal medicine that can kind of stop a rough trip if you need that tool. Essential oils can be really powerful. Like, you're just so sensitive to sensory input that, yeah, having like lavender, different essential oils around. Yeah, I could really like keep going forever. I'm not sure how much is too much, but.
Well, I mean, let's skip to, or let's wind down with mm-hmm. your consciousness hack, because it's related.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And we've already been talking about it. But yeah, I mean, I feel like putting plants and mushrooms in my body is a consciousness hack. It's just like, you know, combining, because they have such an ancient, you know, archetypal consciousness of these different archetypal consciousness that are embodied in these different life forms, the plants and mushrooms. So knowing those archetypal energies and knowing when to ingest them to balance energies that are arising in you is just definitely the biggest life hack I know of. But it's a complex art of not only knowing the plants really well and what properties they have, but then also knowing yourself really well and knowing when you're in need of a certain medicine and at what dose and at what frequency and how to source that and so forth. It's like really my favorite art form. And then a more simple consciousness hack is just microdosing psilocybin most days, honestly. I usually like taking like a tenth of a gram, like just under a tenth of a gram, or if I'm like going hiking or like, you know, gardening all day or swimming or something, then I'll take like maybe 0.2 grams or 0.25 grams, a quarter of a gram. But I really mostly take a tenth of a gram, 0.1 grams, most days, with high doses of lion's mane, and now I'm gonna try high doses of turmeric. But that has just been so profound for many things, but mostly just helping me stay connected to like just the magic and medicine of this world, and just like seeing the world with childlike perspectives and a creative, like optimistic mood, and keeping my mind flexible so I don't get too attached to certain habits or tendencies or a way of life. So yeah, those are my consciousness hacks.
Thanks for coming on the show. Is there anything else, period, that you want to share before we wrap up?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This has been such a treat. Yeah, I just would love to close with kind of what I brought up earlier, and that I just feel we can't have enough conversations about, is just how to respect the wild populations of these plants, particularly the plants that are becoming really trendy, ayahuasca and peyote, and just making sure that the plants themselves, their populations are respected and protected. And not
iboga too.
Iboga, thank you.
Because it takes 7 years to maturity.
Yeah, yeah. Like, is our use of these plants sustainable? Are they regenerative? Are we growing the plants? That's really something I'd like to see us move more towards as a medicine culture, is like the people who are serving, you know, medicines and profiting off of it, to also be investing into growing and stewarding these medicines, and not only the plants themselves, but also the indigenous people that are stewarding them, and also have, you know, generations upon generations upon generations of knowledge and wisdom around their traditions of holding ceremony with these plants. So just really making sure that we're respecting the plants and the cultures that taught us about them. Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Leah. I didn't even realize how much I like to talk about this topic. And yeah, I'm very open to hearing people's experiences combining herbal and mushroom medicines and psychedelic plant medicines. So feel free to reach out to me with information, with questions, with appreciations, and yeah, feel free to follow me on Instagram, or check out my website. Appreciate y'all's support, and looking forward to connecting. And thank you, Leah, for having me.
The Psychedologist is Consciousness Positive Radio. Find us everywhere podcasts are hosted. For more information, visit us on Facebook or online at thepsychedologist.com.